I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, this is Elias Tufexis, and you're listening to Trek Culture.
Welcome to the Trek Culture Podcast. We are your hosts, Sean, Tom, and Chris, who basically owns us all. The documentation went through. He is now the sole owner of our souls. So, Chris, we bow to you. How is everyone this morning?
It's only a 99-year lease.
No, that's fine.
I'm great. I'm raring to go. I am buzzing. I am jumping up and down. I can't stop moving about, thinking about, talking about Star Trek with my best pals. I want to say Sean and Chris.
Close enough. That is, funny enough, like, folks, if you know Tom, he's not joking there. That is actually, that's about as excited as it gets.
Yeah. That wasn't a bit.
Yeah.
No. Yeah, to be honest, I need to calm down. I need to have a little lay down after that. I think I've gone a bit too hard at the beginning.
But Tom, there was a rather exciting Star Trek episode this week.
We are halfway through the final season of Star Trek Discovery, which is a weird sentence to say. But yeah, like it's just blasting through. And I think as well, the pace makes it feel like it's going as fast as it is. And also, yeah, five episodes. But yes, Mirrors. Some stuff happened.
Let's begin with my little description I took off the internet to fill people in who might not be, who might forget, or maybe they don't even watch the show and just like listening to us talk about it. This episode, Mirrors, Captain Burnham and Book journey into extra-dimensional space in search of the next clue to the location of the progenitor's power, while Rayner navigates his first mission in command of the USS Discovery and Culber opens up to Tilly. So some of the things in that description is actually stuff I want to talk about. But yes, I suppose let's get on to what I would say is the hot topic of the first hot topic, which is the Breen. Thoughts?
Conversation I was having with Sean earlier in the week is the difference between an Easter egg and like just addition to the lore and adding to it. And I think that's what this episode did really well. Like they took something that was like still quite mysterious to us after all this time, and they've really fleshed them out. And I think they've given us some rather sick lore to go with them. Yeah. I was quite impressed by the Breen aspect of this episode. It was probably my favourite thing about this episode, their love story, Mull and Luck there. So much so, I had to put the Beach Boys over them again.
You did do that. I enjoyed that. That was fun.
Thank you.
I totally agree. Like, I really like it, you know, because there are some things that don't need a revelation or that don't need to be explained. I don't think this is one of them. I think seeing the Breen, and the suggestion is that in the 32nd century, this is the first time a Starfleet officer has seen the Breen as well. Now, that's certainly what I got from that, from Burnham, obviously, none of them recognizing Locke. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. So I really, really liked that. I know there's other versions in like beta canon about what the Breen are. We spoke about it before, I think, which was, you know, they all wear the helmets as uniform, but actually they're like a conglomeration of different alien species.
Yeah.
Which I also like. I mean, don't get me wrong, I like that. And technically, this doesn't contradict that. Do you know what I mean? You could still have that. But I quite like that, you know, how this got. I also have to say, I love the 32nd century uniforms. I really like that update.
It's a very cool update. Like, obviously, when they stood side by, when you got a picture of Locke and the old Breen side by side, you can really see, like, they've really sort of, like, taken notes from the original Breen uniform, like, how it's all, like, segmented across the torso. Mm. They're exactly the same in that respect. Yeah, they've put in the research, and they've definitely like sort of, how would they look like with 900 years of advancements?
This is Tommy's first difference of opinion in the episode. I wasn't a huge fan of the updated outfits.
No?
I didn't hate them, but I missed the big beak helmet. I thought that was such like a, it was goofy, but to the, just enough for me to be like, oh, this is fun and interesting. And I wanted that back. And I also liked how there was like different colors and stuff with the old suits. And obviously, yeah, like I know that it's been a very long time and they are going to feel and look different, but it just felt a little bit like, did it all have to be black? Did it all have to be so uniform? Like I wanted it to feel a little bit more like the original Breen, because I like that, but again, just a personal taste thing.
Makes sense though that they kept all those apparatus like in the front end of the helmet. Like I was a bit upset they didn't have beaks, they just weren't like eraser ducks. But no, it makes sense that, you know, that apparatus on the front has slowly got smaller and smaller over time, because it's still there. They still have the same sort of ridging going on in that like face bit, in the bit that covers the mouth. So yeah, that technology just got smaller and smaller to the point where they don't need the beak on the helmet.
Now they don't look anything like a bounty hunter from Return of the Jedi.
yeah. They threw that away, didn't they?
I mean, I love how much it's just like, now folks. I mean, like, is this one of those copy the homework but make it a little bit different so they don't know?
Yeah.
But I mean, think about the amount of times Star Wars is like tried to make fun of Star Trek and their names and stuff. It's like they can just borrow from each other. I don't mind.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
Let them make jabs at each other. But that was probably the biggest thing in this episode that I didn't really like. So it was a fairly good episode, I think. There's a few bits here and there that I wish I got to see more of, but overall, I enjoyed it. Yeah, I agree. I like the stuff, the sort of backstory stuff with the two of them. I think that was kind of the strongest thing, because I was thinking as well, it broke up the episode quite nicely. And if we didn't have that backstory in it, it would have been a very simple episode. Like, not a lot happened, even though it felt like it did, but like it was very, these episodes of Discovery are very straightforward. So they're packing it full of other things at the same time.
If I had to lean for a criticism, maybe a bit more sort of variance in their flashbacks rather than it all just being on the launch pad there.
Yeah.
You know, in front of the AR wall, which I, you know, it took somebody pointing it out to me. It was the AR wall. Like, when, if I just took a second to think about it, yeah, of course it's the AR wall.
Yeah. This is one of my little notes is AR wall can get effed. That was.
You really don't like that AR wall, man. Like, I have a love hate relationship with it. I think it's class when they do, like, and it really works with it. When they get it right, I think they get it right. But yeah, there are those scenes where you just, I'm in a PlayStation game here. Yeah.
Yeah, like as much as I miss, you know, shooting scenes in the desert, I understand why they wouldn't do it if they can do it in a studio. Like, uh-huh. I do get it. But when every single flashback is in the exact same place with the same background, it doesn't feel like they're in some huge ship. It feels like they're in front of a.
I think they could have found a corner to like make a calf or something that they could go and have a.
Yeah. Show the AR wall at the beginning, show the expanse of the place, and then go somewhere else.
Yeah. I love the fact that Romulans have little calves and eateries. Like, why can't the Breen?
I love that as well. Jolon True, here's your soup. Okay, what? Yeah.
Someone comes and puts a flower in Luck and Mol's table.
You're part of the Breen insurgency. What I love as well about, I think I said this online as well, what I love about the addition of this backstory is that because I am so jaded by the Bonnie and Clyde relationships always turning on each other in like every film ever, I love that they're not doing that. Like,
these
actually love each other. They are ride or die. They are Endgame, which I'm really happy about. Because it's just like, I'm so jaded. I just want to believe in love again.
But that's pro wrestling. They'll make you believe, and just when you believe, that's when they'll.
Yeah. Yeah. I was surprised and like wrong, because beforehand I had said like, oh, I feel like one likes the other a bit more and really they're just using them for this and that. But I was like, oh, I'm actually glad I'm wrong here, that they do actually have a relationship.
Yeah, I thought that episode would have told you you're wrong.
Yeah.
You're wrong, damn it.
Yeah. No, but I really enjoyed all the Breen stuff. Like, I think that's great additions. Obviously, like, there's been bits of beta here and there and bits of dialogue that sort of allude to their true nature. You know, people have said in the past, you know, they have like a horse face sort of shape to them. Mm-hmm. They could have beaks. They could be like Howard the Duck's walking around. Like,
Technically, that would be a bill, like, actually. So.
Yeah. One thing like, oh, the Breen don't bleed, you know, but I say, well, it depends what form they're in. You know,
that's a good, well, yeah. That is a good point. That's something I'd forgotten about.
Yeah, and who's to say that's blood? It could just be the fluid that they have to like maintain the solidity of that form.
Yeah,
like it like might not the, be blood. It might be just coolant fluid or something.
like the what is it? Was it the T-1000 from Terminator 2? Like just chopping off parts of them that then go back.
Yeah, yeah.
Now I really want to see Locke do like the T-1000 run.
Yeah,
or something.
Big knife hands.
Yeah. But what I like as well is that someone raised a good question the other day of like, how would a changeling interpret a Breen? Are they still solids?
Yeah.
You know? Do you know what I mean? Are they just that little bit too solid that you can't join our club?
Can Betazoids read them?
Ooh.
So many questions. Hopefully we find out, because I would like them to keep the Breen in Star Trek now that they've put them in it back in. It'd be nice for them. They could be an interesting foe, you know, rather than just sort of showing up for this season and then gone again.
And like that with Starfleet Academy, you know, maybe this is a monumental revelation. This could be a part of, you know, right, things you need. Because obviously we still know nothing about Starfleet Academy. Like, are we going to have, like, this week's episode is going to be, we're going to be in engineering school. Next week it's in security school and we're going to be studying the Breen. Do you know what I mean? Like, we can explore this further. We were
talking about in the Trek Culture group chat about, like, someone saying that they might be liquid-based, etc. And I thought that they were more like lime jelly, which the only reason I'm repeating that here is that's what I want to call this episode. So lime jelly, I'm saying it again. But it's an interesting look. It'd be nice to know a bit more about that. I haven't gone any. I know we all have screeners, and I'm not even lying about knowing about future episodes. This is as far as I've got so far. So I am interested to know if we find out any more about the reasons for their state, their like more liquidy state. Is that their actual, like, is that how they normally are, or are they solid or what?
Well, that's it. Actually, funny enough, because on that, you know, this is a revelation that might get me fired. I've only got up as far as where you are as well. I've only seen up to episode 5. So episode 6 might be about to reveal everything. But I know the Breen Primarch makes a comment about, I'm paraphrasing, wasting energy holding that form, when Locke is in his kind of solid form. So that's a good. So is Locke always running at like 20% less energy than he could be because he's trying to hold this form?
That'd be interesting.
And the suits just make it easier for them to be goo and interact with solids and
but they
can, if they wanted to, be solid themselves, but that's like an abomination to do that. Almost,
I wonder, is it almost like a religion? Do you know what I mean?
Maybe. You know,
I might be getting this wrong. I think there was a reference to infighting within the brain earlier than this. So
I think there's factions. Obviously, we got told there was like infighting about who's going to be the potential leader and everything. And I think the dude that his uncle, I think he's vying for control of, you know, this particular set. We're seeing, we're just seeing one of many different Breen factions at the moment. They're all still flying the Confederacy logo, Imperium logo, if you will. Slightly updated. It's less sharp, more sort of like squared edges to it, the logo.
I liked that. That was one of the fun Easter eggs. They had to use it, but you know, I really like just that continuity. Yes, you know, 1,000 years later, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Which is,
we don't have to keep adding and taking stars off our logo.
Like eventually just like, you know, yeah, we have the lovely beautiful, which I've always loved that UFP logo. It's like eventually we had too many member races that we just had to bring it down to those three. what was I gonna say? Actually, speaking of not changing things, right? Again, so this argument comes on. I'm going to give it a bit of time because I think it is worth a discussion. This argument of should the ISS Enterprise have looked like it did in the 1960s, because it's not the USS, so it won't have gone through the same refit process, or do we just accept now that this is what a Constitution class ship looks like in Star Trek? I was going to say, like, I'm not going to just brush aside the people who are upset that basically the Matt Jeffries original design has been affected. I'll say it's been retconned out of Discovery anyway. Obviously, you have Picard season 3 kind of going, no, we got one. We've got one in the Fleet Museum. Look at it right there, the New Jersey. It's looking great. It does look great. What are your thoughts on this? So the ISS Enterprise, Strange New Worlds, 23rd century Constitution class. What do you think?
The way I've just taken it aboard is like, I'm watching the original series and I'm telling myself in the back of my head, this is supposed to look like it does in Strange New Worlds. Do you know what I mean? Like, I've accepted, like, you know, this is just what the technology they had at the time to portray a starship and everything. Like, I've put all that to bed now. Like, don't get me wrong, like, I think it'd be way more impactful if they walked onto the bridge like they did in Trials and Tribulations and stuff. Like, you'd get that same feeling. But yeah, I'm not bothered by it, really. It is what it is. Like, it would look corny as hell if they brought that set back. Like, let's be real. Like, as lovely as it was a product of the time. And yeah, this is how the Enterprise actually looks. Sorry,
Tom.
Yeah, I'm in a similar mindset. Like, as much as I'd love to see that, and I do really miss those sort of more retro, like mid-century futuristic styles, it would be bizarre. I mean, it's kind of like the Enterprise episode when in the Mirror Darkly, like it works in Enterprise, but it still does feel a little bit silly. Like, it still feels a little bit like they are dressing up and playing on the set rather than it actually being on the set, like on the ship. And I've kind of got to the point where I'm just like, maybe I think that's what Chris is saying, like, we are seeing the same thing, but just for a different lens, right? It is the same, but it's just a different style of doing it.
Yeah.
But it's kind of like, I understand both people who would wish it was this and people who enjoy that it's now that. It's kind of like people, the difference between saying a scone and a scone. I don't really care. It doesn't matter too much to me, and I'm happy with either. So maybe there's a way they could have done the original look, but still update it slightly enough to make it feel like it's still part of the same world. I'm not sure. That probably would have been a lot of effort for them to do, and it would have been easier to use the kind of sets they already have.
Someone raised a really, really good point actually online the other day about episodes like Trials and Tribulations, In a Mirror Darkly, and Relics as well. That, as I mean, they're in isolation, love them. You know, love the kind of the slightly retro camp feel of In a Mirror Darkly. Love the deliberate, I mean, it's, we're inserting into footage in Trials and Tribulations. Like, the whole thing was meant as an homage. And of course, that beautiful moment on Relics. None of those episodes had the weight of having to carry an entire show with that as your base. So you know, in a way, those episodes, they were great fun. And not that I don't want to give them any more weight than they do, but like, they are not now your hero base that you have to do an entire show out of from episode one onwards. I actually think that all the updates that have been done with a hell of a lot of respect. I really do. I think there was, I remember back in this, we're going back years now, back in 2009, and the reveal of the JJ Enterprise. And, you know, as always happens, wildly, you know, love it, hate it, best thing ever, worst thing ever. You know, however you feel about it, you're right. But I mean, it was one of the people involved in Trek of the 60s went, I'm not mad. And people were like, well, what do you mean? I said, but they could have done whatever they wanted. They could have gone, you know, the Enterprise has four nacelles or no nacelles, or, you know, it's like a Battlestar or something. They could have done whatever they wanted. Instead, they honored the Jefferies design. And I think they've done that once again. But I do agree with both of you. I think this is what probably they would have done in the 60s, if not, you know, panel for panel. They certainly would have had more detail.
Yeah.
And, you know, the proof of that is what happened between Turnabout Intruder and the motion picture. You know, the D7, for example. Yes, I know they've reclassified it as the Katinga, but they said there was no way we could have used that ship on the big screen. There's nowhere near enough detail. And, you know, much is the same with the, you know, the original refit between, you know, the original series and what we ended up getting in the motion picture. And even before that, what they were going to do with the Phase 2 Enterprise. So, like, at the same time, I'm not saying the people who are like, I miss the 60s design, not necessarily saying I disagree with you. I love the 60s design. I think it's gorgeous. I've literally got like three of the Eagle Moss models sitting beside me here. Seriously, if they ever do a Christmas party, I know their current state, but invite me. I've paid for half the buffet. But I at this stage, if I heard that a Connie was going to be in Starfleet Academy, this is what I'd be expecting now.
Yeah. I think if they were going to do, and I would love to see this, I was just thinking about this now. Like, I loved the old 60s design. I loved the late 80s design from TNG. But I think if they were going to do a show that went back to that, I know they went back to the Enterprise D, but it was still filmed and lit in the same way. So it did feel different and fit a bit more. But I think if they were going to go back and try and do that kind of thing, it would have to be a show based on that. And I would even go as far as filming it in like 4x3 and making the whole thing feel retro and feel like as of the time that it was made. And then you can play around with so much more with that kind of style rather than blending the two different styles and making it just feel a bit strange.
Yeah.
Because
we run into that a lot in Lower Decks, I suppose. Like, whenever they portray like the TOS era, they're always like true to that era, or the animated style. You know, we've seen Monster Maroons and everything, but now they're like clashing with the Strange New Worlds with the crossover at the end there. You know, the depiction of that period is now Pike and everything, you know. Yeah, so you get into this weird sort of, is it both? Is it one or is it the other, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. I just take it as like anything we're supposed to see in the 60s is supposed to look like how Strange New Worlds does, you know. That's today's interpretation of it. And I think they have gone out of their way to make this bridge closer to the original series bridge than what JJ did.
Oh yeah.
You know, at least they've got the red, you know, handbars and stuff around, you know. The screen, even though it's massive now, still has that blue neon tint around it, you know. They have taken a lot more from the 60s Enterprise Bridge than what I think the 2009 one did, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
I mean, the 2009 one, listen, I love those films, but that's an Apple store.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's hardly put the debate to bed. We will get this debate again with the next season of Strange New World, probably. But I think, yeah, like, somebody raised a good point as well. How did Stamets know it was the ISS Enterprise? It was still in the bloody, like, wormhole thing. You couldn't see anything. But I suppose same logic with Tasha and the Enterprise C. Grant, okay, that's sorted.
I think our main sort of point about the episode was, did it have to be the Enterprise? And I think it was just very much a case of writing with what we had available to us rather than, you know, let's write this story and then build the sets to accompany the story. This was very much like, oh, how can we write in an excuse to go to the Enterprise and use that set? I know, well, Dr. Cho was there. All right, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Like, can we sit? It was just a, like, I understand, like, oh, we don't want to stop the action to talk about Spock in the Mirror Universe and stuff. Like, okay, but I do. No, they had the time to do it in Mirror Darkly, you know, with importance. I think like the Spock's path that he took in the Mirror Universe is just as interesting as what Spock did in the Prime Universe. You know, we had that scene with Burnham, you know, in awe of what Spock went on to do in Unification Part 3. Like we could have had her just like in any universe. Yeah, just like Action Saru in any universe, Spock is good, yeah. You know. Yeah, I just think it was a missed opportunity, but I also agree with Sean, like saying, well, why stop there? Let's check in with, you know, Giorgio and everything, you know, like, yeah, I mean, this is something that Michael's probably done in her own time in her quarters anyway, researched what happened to everyone. But Mirror Spock's a little bit different. That's another universe. That's not on our archive. You know, it might be by that point, they might know, because common knowledge to book, that's Mirror Universe. So like it's common knowledge that the Mirror Universe exists at this point, but I guess it's like so far away from them, there's no back and forth between them.
I wonder what it's like over there now. Imagine it become a paradise.
Oh man.
Listen, do you know what? Actually, screw this. We're all going to get together. We're all going to make friends. The Alliance is handing out sweets to children. You know, it's... this is how it is.
I think it could have been any other ship. Any other ship. Like
any constitution. Like, you could use the Enterprise sets. It still, like, doesn't have to be the Enterprise. I mean, the exterior is all CGI.
Yeah.
So, you know?
I get the idea of like putting the clues somewhere important, right, on the Enterprise. Mm-hmm. Well, I think there was more important stuff to talk about as well while you were there. If you want to put the importance of it being the Enterprise, then let's talk about Spock, you know, like let's not pass him off as ferocious as the rest of them.
Would you say that it being the Enterprise made it more of a distraction than a setting?
Oh, massively so. Yeah. Yeah. But again, that comes to our argument. It could have been the Defiant. Wouldn't that be nice to like, just the Defiant's legacy is just popping up. It just pops up, man. You know, I just like the idea that, you know, 22nd century, it like disappeared and then went to the mirror universe back a couple of hundred years, and then somehow it's in the 32nd century in the prime universe. I love it. I love it. What a journey that would have been.
You know that scene where all the delegates are there in season four, they're voting on the DMA. Imagine one of them, right, we'll do a scene like that. One of them's a Tholian, and one is just like, this reminds me of something.
Yeah.
Something I learned in history before.
Yeah.
And then I suppose, funnily enough, like, there's still more to talk about in this episode, but Breen and Enterprise and Clue.
Yeah.
That's kind of the big three. And even the Clue, we just know they have it. You know, I presume episode six is going to go into more detail about the Clue.
Yeah.
And like Breen, a vial of water or something, isn't it?
Yeah.
And like you were saying, the Enterprise as well is kind of pointless. It feels like it was like, if the trailers and stuff, you're like, oh, the Enterprise is there. Mm. And then in the episode, you're like, I guess the Enterprise is there. Like, again, it might lead to something more, but at the moment, it just feels like, look, everyone, remember this. It does not really relate to anything else.
That could have been any ship, man, in there.
Yeah. It's like, but I want to talk about, there's a few things in the episode, two things that I both liked and wished I got to see more of. One is, I always like it when the good guys and the bad guys have to sort of team up for a bit to do some things. And they did that a bit in this episode, but it lasted very quickly, and it was mostly separated up by a backstory flashback thing. So like, seeing them have to do that more would have been nice, I think. And I also, seeing Rayna be captain was interesting, but again, we just didn't see much.
No.
It was talked a lot about how, like, you know, his anxieties of being a captain again, and then we didn't see anything, and then it's done. And it's like, I'd like to see him be a captain more then, if that's what we're talking about.
I think this qualifies as a bottle episode, because we already had the set, you know. Yeah. And I guess with the Defiant, you would have used those sets as well, but, you know, I wanted to go a bit further, and... Dude, we could have had like the Mirror Enterprise D. You know, it's like,
yes,
yeah, like,
it always, like,
the possibilities were endless, man. We they could be like walking through the city on the Enterprise J. I don't.
No, but you're not wrong. I'm gonna make a bold prediction for the rest of this season. And again, I promise I have not seen anything beyond episode five. So. If this does come true, I guessed it, right? I think the Breen will get their hands on it, and I think Maul and Locke will end up, I think we will see more of a team up to stop the Breen from using the Progenitor's tech.
Yeah, it's kind of pointing in that direction, I think, of like, you guys want it for this reason, we want it for this reason, you both don't want these people to have it for that reason, surely.
Yeah.
So that would make sense.
That's where I think this is going. And based on the team up we saw in this week, I'm aboard. Maybe Locke could like lightly stab Burnham a little bit, and then everyone's just quits.
Yeah. What if this secret artifact they're trying to figure out actually just turns off the AR wall? Suddenly, all the sets just disappear, and they realize they're in some studio.
Turn it back on. Oh, it goes really meta. Like, the last scenes that they shot are actually just striking the sets.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like the end of Blazing Saddles. They start just running through the different sets and things.
I love that. I remember reading an interview once. They're just like, we didn't know how to end it.
Yeah.
So we just did that.
It's like all the Monty Python films. It's like, how do we actually end this stupid thing that we've been doing this whole time? I guess just make the police come and shut down the filming. Shall we get to our ratings of the episode?
Yes.
Yeah. I guess I'm in charge now. Chris, out of 10, what are you giving Mirrors?
I can overlook the Enterprise thing, I think, in scoring. in scoring. I think I can overlook it. But I think I would rather it be any other ship, like a Defiant or something, or not even like the old school Defiant. It could have been like a new Defiant class, something that would be like way more interesting than, oh yeah, they had the set. You know, something that we haven't seen. I think it would have been, it would have made it a lot more interesting if it was like a unique location. Instead of just putting Terran logos up in sickbay. I think because of the Breen stuff, like it pushes it way higher. I think like Time Bug, like that's what I'm calling it now, not Face the Strength, Time Bug.
I like it.
I think like Time Bug, it definitely was like my favorite at the time, but it absolutely had like flaws that brought it down to, I think, an 8, I think was the score I gave that, or was it the third episode I was here for? I can't remember.
Yeah, you weren't here for the last one, I think. That was
okay.
Amazing.
But yeah, I would have given that 8 in spite of, and I think I'd go for an 8 again here because of the lore stuff and the love story, the Star Trek love story. I love it. Yeah. Peak of the season, perhaps, so far.
Interesting. Because I remember, so I've watched it twice now, and I was texting Chris the first time, and I was like, why is it the ISS Enterprise? It didn't have anything to do with the plot. And I was kind of like a bit grumbly. And the second time I watched it, I enjoyed it way more. Way more. I am going to give it a 6. It is a strong 6. Like, I liked this episode, and as it stands, yes, it probably is my favorite of the season. I realize I've scored others higher. Loved all of the Maul and Locke stuff. But then it just those few bits just brought it down a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think I'm somewhere in the middle. It was a fine episode, lots of good things, stuff I wanted to see more of. Person who wasn't a big fan of the new Breen look, but was happy to see the Breen back. Grumble, AR will grumble, grumble. So I'm probably going to go for a 6.5, where the Time Bug episode I gave like a 7.5, so that is still my highest episode. I got more of an emotional reaction from certain things and more of an intrigue in that one, where this one was just like, oh, that's cool kind of thing. So 6.5.
That sounds like a good place to head toward the news.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
For over 2 centuries, you're listening to the Federation News Network.
So we have basically like the latest bullet point to add to whatever the heck is going on with Paramount. And this is, I guess it's a pretty big bullet point, is that CEO Bob Bakish is out. And it doesn't look like it was friendly. So I was reading the article that was written by The Guardian. Sorry, just to anyone who's like, you know, why are we talking about this? Paramount on Star Trek. So basically ongoing negotiations between Paramount and Spyglass. Spyglass, which are big. Anyway, they're and the controlling shareholder, Shari or Redstone, and Bob Bakish apparently did not get along, and she's outlived him. So he's out, and three others are stepping into, they've called it the Office of CEO. Paramount put out a statement. Bakish has not put out a statement. And basically, you know, the reason we're talking about this is because in Star Trek's already uncertain future, you know, I'm seeing headlines like this and I'm thinking, no one's thinking, do you know what we should do? Make a Star Trek legacy.
Yeah. Yeah. We're a bit busy trying to sort out this mess that we all seem to be in.
Yeah. Like, remember how long, and because actually I say remember how long, so obviously this was kind of before Trek culture in a way, the long, long re-merger of like Viacom and Paramount and CBS and all that. I've already got details wrong there, but that went on for years. And that was, you know, kind of bring the movies and the TV series back together again. So I don't see a green light for Legacy happening in the next few weeks, put it that way.
Yeah.
It's so annoying because it's like such a money-making thing. Like, it's a sitter. It's right in front of you, man. Like, just to correct you there, you said Spyglass at Skydance.
Thank you. Even as I said, I was like, am I right? Am I wrong? Thank you for grabbing no that. Well, what was I going to say as well? I think as well, one thing that I want to go glass half full here is that as time goes on, there is the worry that people are going to lose interest in Legacy. But actually, yeah. I think the success of Picard proves that, look, that was what, 20 years after Nemesis and people turned up. So I'm hoping it won't take 20 years to get a show like that. But
yeah, I just think people want a direct continuation. They want to see Seven on the bridge as a captain. They just want it to roll straight into Monster of the Week, Planet of the Week, whatever. But in the 24th century, or 25th, actually.
Mm.
25th.
Yes.
Yeah.
Especially now with the loss of Lower Decks, which was obviously our other 24th century one, and the still question mark hanging over Prodigy.
I wouldn't want that big of a time jump after Picard. You know, we already have 1 year jump in the coda, you know. So then what, another 2 years, like she's still the captain. And like, I'd just rather like get into like working out how Jack's going to work on the bridge. You know, I want a period of time of Seven sussing out how to be a captain.
Yeah.
You know, rather than just, oh, she's brilliant. You know, she can do anything now. Striking while the iron's hot, I think is still a valid point. I know people will be there whenever it comes out, but to keep the story going and like, you know, the affection for Star Trek going, like, yeah. Especially when you're pissing off the fans, killing off shows, you know.
Yes.
And doing it in such a way that it's like, hey, we've given you Strange New World season 4, but we're canceling your favorite.
Like, hey, you like that Star Trek thing? How about less of it? Wait, what?
Yeah. And I'm applying to be in charge of their licensing as well. I think they need somebody who isn't going to give their license to products that have nothing to do with Star Trek. Like,
yeah. Yeah. Like, would you ever just help us out? Would you put together some sort of toy line or something?
Yeah. You know? It's amazing they're doing stuff like this, but I haven't got Worf in Call of Duty Warzone yet. Do you know what I mean? Like,
oh, yeah. Like, is it like you want to do skins? That working?
Yeah, can't we have a Kirk skin in Fortnite rather than Kid Cudi? Like, come on, like, like, can we do some Star Trek IP stuff, please? Like, yeah, I'm getting annoyed about this sort of stuff now.
Oh God. Okay.
Star Trek NFTs. You want them?
Yeah. Down.
What are you doing over there?
I do have a tiny little bit of, well, it's not news, but so Master Replicas, I'm sure most people listening will be familiar with it. There's
a decent license there, yeah.
Yes, there is. Yes. They've started their monthly basic collectors club. And the monthly bit being if you join up to this, you can join a monthly Zoom call with whoever the guest of the month is. The first one was Terry Metalis. Second one for Battlestar fans, Jamie Bamber. And then this week on was Brannon Braga. He addressed Alex Kurtzman's comment about filler episodes. And I think because there was a lot of debate about this when that comment kind of went out about, you know, you doing the 10 episode seasons basically helps to avoid, you know, filler episodes. And, you know, you put more, I'm paraphrasing, more effort into the 10 that you do produce. And I mean, I myself think if it wasn't for filler episodes, we wouldn't have things like The Visitor, which is my favorite episode of Star Trek.
Yeah, or Parallels, or yeah.
100%. Yeah. Any of these like bottle episodes. So, I do want to look. I'd be kind. The man was put on the spot. I'm not going to say that he hates all filler episodes. Not what I'm saying. But Brannon Braga, who of course was EP of Star Trek for, you know, so many years, I took issue with that. He's like, good. Hang on. Are you trying to say that we didn't put time and effort into those episodes?
Yeah.
I think that's something that could maybe do with a follow-up interview.
Sure.
You know, because I think, you know, we're seeing what is possibly a soundbite. And
Paul Sutherland particularly loved those episodes, I remember. He loves the day in the life on the Enterprise ones, the ones where there's just no stakes and it's just there's someone stuck in the floor.
That episode of DS9, Civil Defense, season 3, where it's basically we're using the standing sets. We're going to kind of pair up some people who maybe hadn't paired up before. There's a crisis. Go do stuff. You know, it's kind of like, it doesn't further the plot. It's, you know, there's no overarching villain or anything. And yet it's just a fun slice of life. You get to see Garak and Dukat just bitching at each other, which is so much fun. I do feel bad for that one poor fella who just went to work on a Monday morning and he gets vaporized. I always feel bad for those ones, the poor red shirts. Like, they're just like, I just had to pay off my student loans. What is this?
I just think if you've got a strong set of characters, like, and characters that you're interested in and watching their characterizations, like, you can do these sort of day in the life episodes, like filler episodes, if you want to call it, which they're really not filler episodes. They usually bring out the best in writers.
I think, actually, because there's the challenge, isn't there?
Of, yeah.
You know.
How do we make this good? Yeah.
So the people what made some of these episodes didn't particularly love that description of them. So, Alex, once again, we are inviting you to come on the pod and we will discuss this. We will get some clarification.
We won't ask you about Legacy.
Not at all. No. We won't mention potential filming dates or schedules or cameos. We won't mention that at all.
No, he said, like, you know, it's not his decision, you know. Go to bat for us like he did for Prodigy and that, then, apparently. You know, go to bat for us, Alex. Like, get us Legacy. Like, you know we want it. Why don't you go to bat for us? Like, take them all the ROIs you want, return on investment, everything. Like, take it all the folders. Yeah, show them that we want Legacy.
That is it for news, so I would love to hear from our lovely audience.
Yeah, I've got a bunch of questions from you guys using the hashtag AskTrekCulture on Twitter, etc. And I have one that was sent directly to me by our friend at Chris Trekin.
Hi, Grace.
I thought this was an interesting one. What position do you hope to see the stories of Mariner, Boimler, Tendi and Rutherford ending this final season of Lower Decks in, given that this wasn't meant to be the last one?
I don't know if they're going to do it because of like how abruptly it was cancelled. You know, they probably started this season not thinking it would be their last. So I don't know if it's going to end the way I'd hope it to end, which is they all get promoted and they all go to various different ships. I think that's the natural conclusion, but whether or not they do it in the end of season five with no opportunity to go and do what Discovery did and write additional scenes and put them on the end there. Well, I don't know if they have or not, but there's no indication that they have. Yeah, I'd like to see it end in that way, with them all going off into various ships and furthering their careers. I think that's the logical end point.
I think that, yeah, I think that is. I'm going to take the opposite track. What I want is I want a big, like, adventurous episode for the finale, but I want it to finish with them all being assigned more grunt work by Ransom, still together on the Cerritos, because I think that fits the theme of the show really well. And like, you know, maybe, you know, because we saw Boimler take the command seat there last season. We've seen obviously Mariner continue to grow. We need to get Tendi back, things like that. I would love to see maybe like the second to last shot, maybe they're the bridge crew. Do you know what I mean? And Tilin, of course, we will not forget Tilin. But then have your normal bridge crew come in and say, you need it down to waste destruction.
Yeah.
Or something like that. And I just think that would suit the theme of Lower Decks really well.
Tom?
That was my answer too. So, yes.
I've got one here from Hidden Flame. They reached out personally because I think, like, they said something about the producers being ignoring them or something, but yeah. Hidden Flame asks, in the Voyager episode Live and Witness, we see the Doctor take a shuttlecraft heading home. From that star date, the end of the episode takes place and back in time. It's about the end of Discovery and the start of Star Trek Academy. Will he show up?
I want to start this with, I want him to.
Yeah. I think we all want him to, right? Yeah.
Because, and the clip is a year old at this point, so we know he's out there. Because we know that Robert Picardo is a series regular on Prodigy Season 2, I think that makes it less likely.
Yeah. Because they've claimed him, right?
Effectively. Like, yeah. That would be my interpretation. But I want to be wrong. I want to be wrong on that one, because he is an easy character that you could slot into Academy with no, like, oh, I, you know, I did six of the seven, or actually, no, Living Witness, season four, several of the years of Voyager's journey with them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, you know, I'm still me, basically. And I think it would be a great way to lock in that bit of legacy as well, without overshadowing. You want to do new stories, you want to take it in new directions, it's a completely new setting, absolutely grand. Who's your, you know, your medical instructor at Starfleet Academy? One of the most experienced doctors Star Trek's ever seen.
Exactly. There's so many of these sort of like immortal characters that can just slot right in. Like we talked about before, Data, you know.
Data, Pelia.
Yeah. Hell, Q can come back, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Where's Wesley? I'm getting annoyed. We're up to episode five and there's been no hint of Wesley Crusher yet.
Clarify that I did have that question on my document. I just haven't got around to it yet.
Oh, okay.
So I wasn't ignoring him. Just or saving it for a rainy day, but the rainy day has come.
They felt the need to ask me personally, Tom.
That's fine. Okay, this is actually kind of related to what we were talking about earlier, so this might be an interesting one. This is from at Steve TA Gamer.
Oh, hello.
Would be an interesting experiment in the Trek Culture office, how each of you would trim down another Trek show like TNG down to 10 episodes a season. Which would you keep? Would you reorder them?
Oh.
Interesting argument for sure.
I did see this one online. This is a great question. So basically, what was I say? Take a season and get rid of some episodes, is it?
Yeah, like I guess, like what show would you choose? How would you cut it down? An easy option would be something like Deep Space Nine, where they have, you know, ongoing episodes all about one thing. You could probably cut that down quite easily to just like battles, end of battles, etc.
But then you'd like lose the bits that they reference in those episodes.
You know,
and they reference the quieter times, or do you remember what we did on Anestis 3?
I'm not saying we should do it, but this is the challenge we've been given.
Yeah.
TNG would be hard because it's so episodic. It's like, what would you choose?
I really like this as an idea. This may be something that we actually put a bit of time into and come back to, because otherwise it's just like, hey, DS9 season 6, cut some episodes. Tom, go.
Yeah.
It's something we would have to really think about.
I've got an easy question here, though, from Sean Alexander. What is your least favorite starship class? And his is the Oberth. Your least favorite, Sean. You've actually got the model for it. Oh, the Jaeger, of course. Yeah.
Yep.
Jaeger. Yeah, I'd have to agree.
Yeah. Basically, a Mackie, Raider, and Voyager got Cronenberg.
I'm just going to use this opportunity to go back to something in the episode that pissed me and Sean off. And that was the lack of acknowledgement between Rees and Raina when a Constitution class comes out of the nebula or wormhole, whatever you want to call it. You've set it up two episodes in a row, just like a little sort of like nod at each other. Like, I think that was the biggest down I had. I think that went further than having the Enterprise in it. I think the lack of acknowledgement between the two of them, you know? Yeah. I think that was just set up perfectly. And I don't know if that's a case of like this writer not talking to the previous writer, but the way things are flowing, they must have like all been in a room together at some point to work out like the grand strokes and stuff. So why not have the conclusion of Raina and Rees?
I don't know. Yeah. And then, I mean, like, I can understand Rees not being on the ship as it flies away. Rees is more security. Yeah,
sure,
like,
sure.
I get that. I do. But also, can you say writing a Wellsicon and Detmer out of this season?
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah.
I'm sorry, did they bring it up. The producers or something? Anyway.
Could we add a question about the least favourite? You know, I just want to talk about Rees's favourite. Any more questions?
Yeah, I've got one that's kind of the flip side from that, which is from the same person, Sean Alexander, asking
if... Oh, he's getting them all.
Yeah, he is. What ship / station from Star Trek would you choose to live on?
I would say DS9, but it tends to get battered a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a bit unsafe, that.
Well, that's they all do, really, because my automatic choice would be like Enterprise D, because it's lovely and comfortable. But then, you know, the Borg might just hop on and assimilate me. So you've got to kind of take out that side of it. Like, what's the most comfortable place to, because Deep Space Nine would be fun. There's a lot of fun that can be had, but I am much more of a comfort, just stay in my quarters kind of guy. So I think Enterprise D would work for me.
Mm-hmm. I just don't want to live on the underside of the saucer section. We all know why.
I'm going to say a Nova class, firmly within Federation lines. Yeah,
like in the solar system.
Yeah. We're the only ship in... Well, no, we're many ships in range. Yeah, we're not the only one. Pick someone else. We're studying this planet, man.
I have one that's technically not an Aztrek culture, but it is, because Agio Ramblings' Kit Marie Rackley has tagged us in Amanda Wong's question. How's that for a link? If Moopsy drank Wolverine's bones, could he heal from that?
Adamantium Moopsy.
That's terrifying. Moopsy. There we go. All right. Thanks very much, everyone.
There's your podcast.
Yeah. There we go.
I think are people still listening to us, Tom? Are they still Apparently. Listening?
I check and I go, wow, the numbers are still doing well. I don't know why.
There's better podcasts out there, I'm sure.
thank you so much for listening. God only knows why. Thanks.
Yeah. But we really appreciate you all.
We really do.
Well,
Tom doesn't, but everyone else does.
So. Yeah, the more you listen, the more work I have to do.
Right, okay. So, everyone, you're awesome and you're wonderful. Thank you so much. Please follow us on the various things at Sean Ferrick, at Editor Chris Edit, at Tom C. Roberts. I don't know why I didn't remember that. That's literally your handle.
Tom C.
Tom, you've got a book coming out. When?
Yeah, book coming out July. There's a cover, Witch Hazel from Slay's
Pilgrimage. Looks great, by the way. Looks
amazing.
Yeah, we've been working on it for months and months and months. So before this year. And back and forth. And I'm really happy with it. And it's turned out really well. And there's lots of nice little hints towards things on the cover. And I'm already thinking about the next covers that I want to make, but I'm going to give my artist a break and wait till later on. But yeah, July this year, there'll be actual dates coming at some point, but Witch Hazel, please, please have a look.
Brilliant. Chris, and, do you have any
questions? No, I was just going to say, in my life, I've recently completed Dragon's Dogma 2, the unmoored version. It's pretty cool because like you're playing the game and it doesn't have 2 in the title. You only unlock the sequel by doing something and go to this like unmoored world, and that's what I've done. I've saved the world, guys.
Well done. Round of applause.
Thank you.
If there was going to be one person to do it, I knew it would be you.
Yeah. So the Arisen is no more. The world is reset. No dragons.
Wait, no, hang on. I want dragons. I take it back. Oh. You're an ass.
Yeah, well.
Okay, I think we'll leave it there. Also, just for the record, I also have books available on Amazon. Check them out, please. I hope you like them.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.